Welcome to Area 91 on 91.3 FM, Alamo, Nevada. Area 91 is dedicated to UFOs and UFO-related phenomena and will explore the old as well as the new concepts within this field. This program will also bring reports and interviews of people who have seen or who have had encounters with UFOs or the beings that inhabit them. Here is the host of Area 91, Geraldine Ahrens.
Nigel Kerner is back to talk more about his book, Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls, The Conspiracy to Genetically Tamper with Humanity. We are talking via Skype, which is a computer-based service rather than a telephone. Mr. Kerner, welcome once again to Area 91.
Hello there, Geraldine. Very nice to be able to talk to you again.
I think we ended our last segment talking about Jesus Christ and his teachings
and the shroud.
Now, you say that organized religion has distorted the teachings of Jesus Christ. And my question is, what have you read that brought you to that conclusion?
Well, it's not what I read. You know, if I can, I think we were talking in the previous program, if any of your listeners were listening to that, about this business of the Shroud of Turin. I was trying to make a connection between this gray alien phenomenon and the UFOs and so on with, in fact, the teaching of a great ethic to humanity, or the great ethics to humanity, whether it was done by Jeshua ben Joseph, who was in fact, was the real name of Jesus, his Hebrew name, or Gautama Buddha, who's the Buddhist, great Buddhist teacher who gave us wondrous wisdom. And I tell you, we hear so much negative stuff about the Muslims and so forth, but if you read the Quran and you see the beauty that comes out of the lips of their great Prophet Muhammad, you will find a complete dichotomy with what commonly certain people claim this thing to be, and so on. So they had some wonderful things to say to humanity. All of it to do with an ethic of thinking holistically, bringing things together and so on. And they were implying that with your mind, if you did this enough, something happens to transform your body into a state that can be admitted not to this universe that will end with force, and that's what cosmologists will tell you now, it will end, but to admit your body and your being and your attitude, your mind, your everything about you to another universe that is eternal in scope and has a wondrous state of existentiality, so to speak. And I think that this is what these great teachers had foreseen. And then actually come and confronted a localized kind of honcho coming in spaceships going at 50,000 miles a second or whatever, who are actually machines, know nothing about this grand scale of natural livingness and continuity, but they are really machines to do a utilitarian job, rather like, you know, we are sending machines now to look at asteroids and so forth and give us send us back information and so on. We're doing it now with spacecraft and so forth, with our own technology, never mind some advanced technology, maybe 10, 15,000 years older than ours. Ours is only 200 years old, you know. It's only 1905 that the Wright brothers, I think, took off from the ground, so to speak. And here we are, 105 or 6 years later, you know, in the moon, going in past the actual solar system and so on. So, you know, things move extremely fast in science, so to speak. But there is something that is grander than all of that within our scale of reference, our scale of being. And I think what happened with this incredible thing called the Shroud of Turin, and let me tell you, I looked at this in as clear and as deep a way as I possibly could, did really concurrently with the research I was doing on UFOs, I also did research into the Shroud of Turin and so on. And together with a colleague of mine, who Dr. Andrew Silverman, who's actually Jewish by persuasion, by religious persuasion, but an utter and avid believer in the veracity of this shroud, this cloth, let me tell you, Geraldine, you have here the verification of something absolutely fantastic, and that this individual they call Jesus Christ did in fact resurrect. I am talking now the deepest and the most complicated science when I say that. I've looked at this six ways to Sunday through all the types of science one can throw at it. And last year in May, I'd written a book about the Shroud of Turin some years ago, which I didn't get published because my publisher said it was 20 years before science caught up with what I said. However, I then wrote another book in which I mentioned this, and Dr. Silverman read this and was so inspired by it that he decided to do his own kind of take on all of this. And what he has discovered and what he says was so impressive, he was invited to speak at a symposium last year in May in Frascati in Italy, where all the world's top scientists doing research on the shroud, and believe me, that dating test is a fallacy, and they can prove it. The thing that said the shroud was a 15th century or 14th century thing, it's absolute nonsense. But in order to, it would take a program on its own. It would take Dr. Silverman talking on its own on this, on your program, to be able to actually do justice to all the evidence he has. But let me tell you this. So we went to Frascati, and he gave one of the most awe-inspiring dissertations about this, so much so that they're having another research seminar in Poland this year. All of that to actually verify this incredible piece of cloth and what happened between its folds 2,000 years ago, when the body of a man that was dead, the dead body and dead cell structure of a human being, glowed for a few nanoseconds brighter than the sun and left a scorch, left a burn, left a kind of stain, not paint, not the usual nonsense that you hear spoken about it, but actually a surface picture coded with distance information, such that when you put it through an image intensifier, a two-dimensional flat sheet, which is a positive, right, would actually give you a three-dimensional representation of the being that was under it when this effect took place. No other photograph on the earth is capable of that. It is blasting the heads off scientists when they see this kind of propensity that this thing has had and has done. And I went to Frascati to see this image. It's an actually very faint stain, reddish stain on a piece of cloth. It's kept in Turin Cathedral. And let me tell you, it then added a great deal of kudos and affirmation to what I was discovering about other things to do with UFOs and so on, and the premise that Jesus Christ came here to save man. And in doing that, he was trying to tell us, hang on to your natural livingness, because you can do what I am doing under this cloth when dead if you hang on to that. But if you let these creatures, in some kind of way, with their mechanized types of being, intercept you, you would stop that. And that's the incredible price that we may all have to pay if technology and what these things are going to do, Geraldine, in the future, with SIM card insertions into us and so on, that may well be the converting of man so that man walks as machine and stops this great propensity that Jesus Christ came here to prove we can all do, gaining access through this incredible burst of energy of light into this other universe where all things go together. So you see, I'm trying to tie the whole thing together into one great big parcel. And you know, if you read the book, you will find that there's a lot more detail to that than I can actually speak about.
There is an extreme amount of detail in your book. And, well, I'm not going to say extreme. I don't want to think people to think that you know, there's just so much that they wouldn't want to read it, because I have read your book and it is very, very interesting. And could you tell our listeners maybe why the aliens want to try to capture our souls? Why are they after this?
Quite simply because they have been given a program that says preserve yourself so that you can preserve whoever created you, right, the creators. And so to do this, you have to, in fact, guard against any dangers, go out there in the universe, find who is dangerous. They come about, they go with their ships or whatever it is, and, you know, they've now found there are thousands and thousands of planets out there. 10 years ago, there was something like 15 or 20.
Right.
Now, they're finding thousands. Well, I tell you, out there is huge amounts of traffic, Geraldine. This is happening everywhere. This is not unusual out in space-time out there with all those planets and so forth. And this business of natural being against artificial being is the big deal. If we create and we make robots with artificial intelligence, and that intelligence is greater than ours, and you give them commands, they will follow relentlessly those commands as a program. And that might well mean taking over natural life forms and making those life forms pay the price for us short-sightedly inserting programs that provide a paradox for them, a paradox that actually says, look, if you want to live, you've got to get yourself appended to something else that can continue through the cycle of birth. And it's quite simply this. I think they can't be born. The second law of thermodynamics breaks everything up. So when you make one of these things, it will, in the end, break down. Everything rots in the universe. But we continue, we rot in stages, but we also come back again. We're reborn when we start a new lifetime, and we go on and on and on like this. They want to append. They want to get on that cycle. And wouldn't anyone with high intelligence want to do that? If they see a primitive ape is capable of that when they first came here, that's what they saw. If that is the capacity that one of these things have, well, I want some of that would be quite the simple conclusion. So I think they've come here, and we don't know that this is what they are doing. And I believe with their intelligence, there are some people on this earth actually helping them to actually do this to the body politic of the human race. And it's a very, very scary thing if this is true. Now, let me tell you, I don't want to believe this. But the more I looked at this question, the more I was convinced that this thing is absolutely true. Because you've got this business of abductions, you know. Well, they think nearly 5 million Americans, for instance, have been abducted. And you've got all the stories that these people tell about being intercepted by these gray entities, these things that put instruments into them. And it's a harrowing experience, apparently, for a lot of people and so on. And all of it is to do with some kind of genetic experiment where, you know, genetic things are harvested from human beings and so forth. So obviously there is some genetic experiment going on even now at this moment. And what I think they are doing is refining the species to get more and more equivalent to their own type of machine-type demeanor. And one day, I fear, maybe man shall walk as machine. And that's the thing that I think that somebody ought at least to draw the attention of the world to, even though it may not be true. If what I say is not true, I apologize to everybody, but it would at least be a warning and something interesting for us to consider. But what if I am right?
Well, I know.
Your
book, you say Dr. David Jacobs, who has interviewed abductees for years, and I guess he's interviewed quite a few of them, he says the abductions are changing. How are they changing since he's been doing this?
Well, they're changing into actual hybridizations. What they're doing is merging their program into human beings. So there's a half-type human and half-type themselves. I think what they don't want us to spot is that what they are like, because we will immediately know, would we not, they're not human like these hybrids. So what they're trying to do is to keep our body form as much human looking as possible, but change the mind form and the direction of thinking and the type of thinking, and that will then drive us to their way of understanding and doing things rather than our natural way of doing that. And I think that is what Professor Jacobs is now finding, that there's a huge amount of hybridization. It's accenting itself much more towards hybridizations. The hybridization program has accelerated over the past 20 years, you know, Jacobs claims, for instance. And so, you know, that is something I think we all need to take a look at. Let me tell you this. All of this seems rather concerning, does it not? A bit bizarre and so on. But I tell you, I'm trying my best not to be scary. I really do try my best in the book not to be scary by looking at the science of it and putting the counter view and making sure that we know how best to cope with this, that, or the other contingency. But I tell you what, I have children, I'm sure. All your listeners, have the kids to look to and so on. And that is something that we just can't ignore. Every time I look at the eyes of my kids, I have to ask myself, look, what is their future? If this thing is happening, if now we are making these technological innovations that can put biological transistors made of biological tissue into people, it won't be long before we create something that is inserted into us that can control human beings. And who will do the controlling is what I'm saying. So I'm for people to understand things all the way and make decisions before we kind of fall into it with the day's own troubles, so to speak. Just look at it. Guard ourselves as much as possible, because technology can do such terrible damage to so many people, whilst it can also release us from a great deal of misery. It can also, on the other hand, cause so much trouble that it may well be irreversible to the body politic of humanity itself.
Well, if we have people out there, and we have millions of people out there whose DNA has been hampered with, to start to begin the process of becoming non-human, when this Armageddon that is spoken of in the Bible, and of course you feel that our highest political positions around the world have already been degraded, which that was, for what
Please
is,
forgive me for that.
Well, it's not that I can disagree with that one. Definitely not. But, okay, the Greys are actually going to take people off of the planet, remove their DNA, and in their lives. Now, are these the people that they have been abducting, and the only people left here are going to be those that have already been genetically tampered with? And as for genetically tampering with people, I mean, this is done totally against people's will. They don't go out there and say, please come down and turn me into a hybrid. I mean, can we keep our humanity in spite of that?
Yes. Well, this is where the nice part of the whole thing comes in. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to say this. I think if you're an abductee, you're a very lucky person, because you are the people they cannot do anything to. And they are abducting you to find out why. And I think that they will look at you and do these things. It's true you go through hell. It's true you go through all that suffering. And my heart and everything about me goes out to you. Please believe me, all you listeners who have been abducted. But let me tell you, you may be some kind of very special honcho. And in fact, I think that from my own researches, I've come to the conclusion, and you'll have to read the book to see why, I've come to the conclusion that you are special, that they can't intercept you, that they can't get their programs into you. So when the time comes for the transmogrification of the human race, shall we say, if it's going to occur, and I'm not saying by any means that it's going to occur, but supposing it does, I think you are the guys who they can't do this to. Now, I'll tell you why that might be. I believe that this incredible being, Jesus Christ, and I see him as a secular being, by the way, not in any terms of some kind of religious tribe or whatever. I think this was a, if you read the real books about Jesus Christ that the Christian church took out, the cheats, 334 AD or whatever, the Council of Nicaea. If you really look at all the Nag Hammadi texts and the Pistis Sophia and all the great authorities that they threw away, you'll find that Jesus was an amazing fellow. He was a great scientist. He wasn't talking about making churches and all the rest of it. That was something that a group of people hijacked, if you see what I mean, in their own interests, so they could live longer in their monasteries or whatever by all the land that guilty barons gave them under the license of going to heaven, if you know, indulgences they used to call it, if you like. So they accumulated all this wealth and all the rest of it and said, if we don't move our hands in space-time in the form of a cross, you don't go to heaven. Nothing could be further from the truth than that. If you care, if you love, and if you know and understand this business of how you put things together, you will go to heaven, is the way the research has turned out, if you see what I'm trying to say, despite what these rascals say, if you see what I'm trying to say.
Yes,
I'm sorry.
I do.
I hope I don't sound like some kind of missionary here screaming, you know, all the wrath and whatever. But really, honestly, I think the most important thing to realize is that abductees are in fact a special group. And that gave me an insight to look at, which has, at the moment, for my third book, provided some very interesting conclusions about what Jesus might well have left on the earth that resists these creatures. I think it's possible that he did leave progeny. I think it's not just possible, I think he did. And I think that this progeny passed down over 2,000 years, right, has made its way through the entire family of man. And some of us have inherited some inuring agency, something that makes it difficult for these creatures to intercept our DNA in such a way that they can get a hold of us. And I do believe that the vast majority of humanity could have got these genetic signals, if you like, or signalings, if you like, that actually resist what these creatures are doing. Because if Jesus came to save us, he would have done something not just in giving us the principles on which the saving worked, but also the hardware on which the saving worked itself. It's reasonable to actually think that he may well have done that. And in fact, because a few people wanted him to be something celibate and pure and whatever, well, he was doing the greatest possible practical thing he could. Look, if these guys are going to take these people out, let me put something in the body politic of humanity and the physical sense of humanity that will give them a resistance to whatever these creatures might do genetically to them. And maybe many of us are safe through this. But then, many of us may not be. And that's one of the reasons why I have written a series of books in order to look at where and how this might prevail, if you see what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I do. And I guess through reading your book, now there's a couple of questions here that I haven't been able to get to. What are soul fields? You mentioned that in your book, and I know this is kind of like, you know, you've been on a nice roll with, you know, and I'm asking you to switch gears here in the middle of things.
Yes.
But yes. As I read your book, I come across, you know, soul fields, and yes. While I kind of understand that, I would like listeners to be able to have something more too.
Yes. You know, there are many people around the world, lots of them who work in these places where, you know, people die and so on, go to die, hospices and so forth, and doctors and nurses and medical staff and so on, who claim to see at death something coming out of a physical body, rising above it, some kind of shadow field that either comes out of the head or from the chest and moves away. I remember seeing some years ago a film of where a tiger was actually shot in the jungles of India. And you see as the animal is twitching in its last breath as a result of being killed or being shot, you see this field of smoke coming from out, not from its mouth or its rear area, but from the middle of its tummy area. You see a field of smoke quite clearly rise and move away. And some kind of adornment, it seems, moves away at death from the physical body. Now, this adornment, this kind of disposition, which seems transparent to some, smoky to some, in some kind of form, I believe is its nature is what is called unforced. Everything in the world is enforced. Absolutely everything is locked in very powerful tension and force. But in the space between the points where this tension is, are tensions of no force. Complete absence of force. It's called unforce. And that, I believe, is the corridor, the waveform. It forms a series of lines and corridors to what is known as the other universe, the Godverse. The Godverse has no tension. It's completely the opposite of our universe, where it is force. So just to put this simply now, obviously, I have to state this a little bit more in a more complicated way in my books and so on. But just to give you a quick idea of what I might mean by this, I call it an morphogenic electrospatial field. And that field, that thing you see rising, is like a computer program of all and everything your own particular being has ever been and experienced. All that information is there in this thing. And that then continues on into a place where it can, and of course I explain all of this, and it would take many, many programs, if I may say so, to actually give you a full idea of what this might be, Geraldine. So please, can I take a rain check on that and ask the people who, if they really want to know more about it, to buy the book?
Oh, yeah, definitely buy the book. I just, you know, it was one of those things I came across as I was reading. And I thought, you know, this would be interesting to, you know, ask you about. Your book's very interesting. And it, at least I think I told you at one time, maybe in another program, a lot of the sciences went over my head.
Yes.
But
I do apologize for that because, I mean, obviously I've had to write this so that science too might look at this seriously, if you see what I'm trying to say.
Oh, no, I understand that completely. Some of the science part I had to just kind of gloss over. I get this deer in the headlights look, you know. But you know, reading all the rest of it was, like I say, it's a very interesting book, and I'm glad that I was able to sit here and read it. And once again, we are coming down to final minutes here, and I have to wrap this up. So I appreciate you coming on for a second show. And I know you've got a couple other books, and you did mention having one book that you were in the process of writing, I guess.
Yeah, I just finished it.
And you just finished it. Well, maybe when you get that one, when that one goes to the publisher, maybe we'll get you back on about that one too.
Oh, I'd love to. But the problem is that this particular one that I've just done has gone such thermonuclear dimensions.
Okay.
I don't think they'll ever publish the
other one. Okay. Okay. Well, Mr. Kerner, thank you very much. I have been talking to Nigel Kerner about his book, Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls. You can order his book and read more about him at www.nigelkerner.com. That's NigelKerner.com.
You've been listening to Area 91 on KQLN FM 91.3, Alamo, Nevada, exploring new concepts and experiences of UFO phenomena. This program is property of KQLN Radio. No rebroadcast or distribution without its written permission.